out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 3rd of June 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, you've got an interesting story to start off with today. Another holo hoaxer, another person claiming to have had a whole family holocausted and she's been caught out lying. This regularly happens. Too many for me to actually remember here. And of course, this is one of the main reasons why we doubt the story of the gas chambers is because all these supposed witnesses to it, they've all been found to be unreliable. They put the very best eyewitnesses in court against Ernst Zundel about 20 years ago, and they were shown to just be making it up. This is before you get to the forensic evidence and the fact that in the supposed gas chamber itself in Auschwitz, there are no traces of cyanide to the levels that you would expect if it had been used for gassing people with cyanide. To the contrary, the chamber that was used for fumigating bedsheets and clothing, that's full of cyanide because that's what it was used for. It was used for getting rid of disease, basically, typhus and typhoid and the typhus mite, which is what spreads it. Also, you've got the way that they were supposedly gassed. There were supposedly holes in the ceiling and German soldiers threw pellets of cyanide in through these holes in the ceiling and it just magically turned into a gas and killed everyone. Of course, that doesn't happen. You have to heat the cyanide up to get it to turn into a gas. You can't just toss pellets in through a hole in the roof. And if there's a hole in the roof, that's obviously going to let the air in, isn't it? So many holes in this story. And yet people fall for it. People are so shocked when you say to them, well, there are holes in this story. I mean, they're horrified. It's like their whole world is falling apart. They've never heard anybody doubt this story before. They never questioned the fact that there are laws in place in 27 countries in the EU to prevent people discussing it, prevent people questioning it. Now, why would that be if there wasn't something suspicious about this story? And there obviously is something suspicious about this story, and it's now been exposed. German historian Maria Sophie Hingst, famous for her blog about family members who perished in the Holocaust, has been caught in a lie. The revelation also put the media, which published her other personal stories, in a bind. Hingst, who lives in Dublin, rose to prominence because of her stories about her alleged Jewish ancestors who tragically died in the times of the Holocaust. These were published on her blog, Read On, My Dear, Read On, which is now offline, and which started back in 2013 in Dublin. The blog featured accounts of her grandfather in particular, who she said was killed in the Nazi death camp Auschwitz. Because Auschwitz wasn't a death camp. Auschwitz was a facility where work went on, factory work went on. And the people that were in there were paid for doing their work with tokens. There was a shop there, there was a brothel there, there was a swimming pool there, there was an orchestra bit there, there was a football pitch there, there was a hospital bit there. The people that were there, they kept them in good condition because they needed them for the war effort. I mean, what sort of sense is there in killing off people that you need to work in the factories. The Germans were all out there fighting on the battlefields, and people that were in these camps, they were offered the chance to work, and they would be paid. And you wouldn't want somebody doing the work that didn't want to be doing it, because they could very easily sabotage the equipment. So the people that were working there, they would only have been doing it if they'd wanted to do it. It's the same as in prisons today. They don't have people working in prisons that don't want to work, because they're likely to sabotage things. It's the same back then. Plus, you've got the fact that the Red Cross went into Auschwitz, and they said that the number of people that died there was, I think, 2,000 or 250,000. That was all. None of them died from gassings. They died from natural causes. And then you've got the fact of the plaque there, that originally it said 6 million Jews died here, then it said 4 million Jews died here. I think it says it's possibly 1 or 2 million Jews died here now. It keeps changing. But in these countries where they have these Holocaust laws, if you say anything less than 6 million Jews died, that's Holocaust denial. And of course, what's the opposite of a Holocaust denier? A Holocaust worshipper. Because this is the religion of the New World Order. This is our new religion. Heresy. It's heresy to doubt the gas chamber story. The new temples are the Holocaust museums. The idols at the museums are the piles of shoes and the piles of hair. And these other supposedly horrific evidence of this happening. And of course, they shaved the people's heads because they had lice. They gave them work boots because they didn't want their feet to be harmed. That's why there are shoes there. That's why there are piles of hair there. That's the reason for it, because they were looking after these people. And this so-called historian, I mean, she's clearly been making a fortune off of this, but her exploits did not go unnoticed, as at some point her blog reached a whopping 240,000 readers, a quarter of a million readers this woman had, while she was named Blogger of the Year and awarded by the Golden Bloggers Association, the group behind one of the major German social media influencers awards. I guess they just didn't dare investigate to see whether she was telling the truth, because of course if she was questioned, again, that would be Holocaust denial, wouldn't it? Hingst was also invited to moderate panel discussions for the Association of Patrons of the Berlin Holocaust Memorial, and frequently spoke on behalf of relatives of the Holocaust victims, according to the German press. So she was speaking up for all the other so-called victims. She must know that it's a scam, otherwise she wouldn't have been doing that. However, her stories, which awoke such an echo in her readers' hearts, turned out to be completely made up, as a group of archivists from the German town of Stralsund demonstrated. Hingst indeed mentions Stralsund as the hometown of her family, and rightly so. The town archivists, who were alerted by another German historian about the inaccuracies in her blog posts, found out, though, that her grandfather had never been sent to Auschwitz and was not even a Jew. He was a Protestant pastor, and his wife was a dentist, and also a follower of Protestantism, according to Der Spiegel Weekly, which was the first to break the story. Actually, none of her relatives were victims of the Holocaust, according to the German media. Well, why does it take German historians and archivists from a German town, why does it take them to alert the world that this is a scam? Why wasn't it the Jews that were alerting the world to this? Was this woman claiming Holocaust reparations? We know that any Jew that was in Europe at the time of the war is entitled to reparations. Was she claiming reparations? Why didn't the Jews check this out to see that this woman was lying and pretending to be a Jew and making all this up? Of course, they wouldn't do that, because this benefits them. This benefits them to have this myth continually repeated and continually in the public's eye. I mean, even this, maybe this doesn't harm them, because it's still bringing up the subject of the Holocaust. And it seems that no matter how many of these Holocausters are discredited, the majority of people still believe in it. They still have faith that what they're being told by these holo hoaxers is the truth. The situation looks even more bizarre in the light of the fact that Hingst, who is now in hot water over her bogus stories, did not just manage to persuade her sizable audience about the existence of as many as 22 fictional Jewish relatives, but even deceived Israel's Jerusalem-based Holocaust memorial, Yad Vashem, and got them to put her relatives in their official remembrance lists by sending them fake pages of testimony. Well, they're saying here the existence of as many as 22 fictional Jewish relatives. There are 6 million fictional Jewish dead in this. I mean, the Red Cross, as I say, they were there in every one of these camps, and they said that it was something like 250,000 Jews had died. That was all. We've got the Jewish Almanac, which shows that at the end of the war, there were actually more Jews than there were at the start of the war. And there weren't as many as 6 million Jews in Europe at the time of the beginning of the war. This figure was just plucked out of the ether and put forward because it has Kabbalistic significance to the Jews. Again, we know that they were claiming that 6 million Jews were at risk of perishing back in 1918. Right back at the beginning of the 20th century, they were using this 6 million figure to try and gain contributions, charity from people, saying that they were going to starve or saying that the Russian Tsar was going to kill them all. They came up with all sorts of exaggerated threats that were going to kill off 6 million Jews. You can look it up on Google and see all the newspaper headlines using this number. And this woman, well, she's created 22 fictional ones. And you just wonder how many others have decided that they're going to claim to be Jewish and make up stories like this and get put into the Yad Vashem pages of testimony and then claim Holocaust reparations. Now the German Foreign Ministry has had to alert the memorial about the recent revelations related to the blogger. Hingst herself apparently does not see the problems with her years-long hoax. And again, that just gets repeated. I mean, all the ones that I've seen that have been caught telling lies have not seen any problem with them telling lies. They've said, well, this is a good thing because it keeps the Holocaust in the public mind. It keeps people talking about it. These things did actually happen, so what's wrong with me just writing fiction about it and claiming it's real? That's the sort of arguments that they have. And of course, there's the famous chap that was saying it was real in my mind. Of course it was a lie, but it was real in my mind. I mean, all these sorts of excuses they will come out with. The historian told Der Spiegel, through her lawyer, that her blog entries were written with a considerable degree of artistic freedom. Yeah, quite a considerable degree to invent 22 relatives and have them all gassed by the Germans. She also explained that she did it not for the sake of fame, but allegedly to combat severe depression. This is literature, not journalism or historiography, she said. Well, that's a novel one. Normally it's to combat hate speech, combat racism, combat anti-Semitism. But at least she's been honest here. It's a purely selfish motive. She wanted to combat severe depression. I think she just wanted to make a name for herself. And she quite clearly doesn't see that she's done anything wrong, because she's increased the sympathy for the Jews here. The ones who got themselves in a real bind as a result of the award-winning blogger being exposed as a hoaxer were the German media and some other Western outlets. It was soon revealed that Hingst didn't stop at making up her family history and went even further by creating some fictional stories about her own life. Over the years, reputable German media outlets were more than eager to publish stories about the woman, who, according to her own words, established a clinic in the New Delhi slums and helped refugees coming to Germany integrate by launching sex education courses. Of course, she would be encouraging the invasion of Germany, and of course she would be encouraging miscegenation and non-whites to sleep with whites. I mean, that's just par for the course. I mean, these people, if they're into one side of it, they're going to be into all of it. Now, as these facts have also been proven untrue, the media has rushed to frantically apologise to their readers and explain that they had no reason to doubt Hing's stories back then. Surely they would have been able to check whether she did actually have a clinic in the New Delhi slums. I mean, what was that, a sexual health clinic in the New Delhi slums that she's trying to promote here? But the bigger story with this is, of course, that if you are a nationalist and you're advocating for white people, you're always going to get accused of wanting to gas 6 million Jews. You're always going to be linked to National Socialism. And when the general public, when they think of National Socialism, that's what they think of. They think of Jews being gassed. And of course, the reason for that is because the establishment don't want people researching just what National Socialism was. They don't want people looking into the economic theories of National Socialism, or the way that the people back then lived, how they had no crime, how they were all working for the good of one another, how it was a Christian administration, how it was based on Christian ideals, the Christian ideal of loving your neighbour as yourself. They don't want people discovering this, which is why they scare them with the Holohoax stories. That's why they had to come out with the Holohoax stories. And then it becomes of benefit to them that they can link nationalism today to that. Which is why we have to break this hold that the Holocaust has on people. It's why when these stories come up, we will talk about them here at Radio Aryan. There are other nationalists that try to avoid the Holocaust issue, and they think, well, it happened 70 years ago. There's no point in really talking about it now. I don't think it should be the centre of what we talk about, but it should definitely be a part of it. Revisionism should definitely be seen as a part of modern-day nationalism, because it helps to deflect these attacks that are levelled against us. And it also helps to show people that they're being lied to, and they're being lied to about really important things, really important parts of history. We've been told a pack of lies about. And the good guys were the Germans. They weren't the ones that were trying to conquer the world. They didn't have a world empire. It was the British Empire that had conquered most of the world. The Germans just wanted to have National Socialism in Germany. Adolf Hitler said National Socialism is not for export. Obviously, there were other nationalist regimes, and there were fascist regimes that were all sort of based around the same idea, but that's because nationalism is putting the needs of your neighbour, your racial kinsman, above the needs of yourself, putting the needs of the nation above the needs of yourself, loving your neighbour as you love yourself, rather. Which is fascism when you have working for the good of the whole rather than working for the good of the individual, and not letting corporations and businesses be formed that are going to profit from harming the nation. So you don't allow pornography. You have strict alcohol laws. You have strict gambling laws. You don't allow things that are going to harm the morality of the nation. These are all things that the kings had to do in the past. They had to show that they were moral people, and they were responsible for the upholding of the moral law in the kingdom, banning things like the promotion of homosexuality, like they still do in Russia. And all these things are part of nationalism. And of course, they were a part of National Socialism. And I think anyone that is serious about nationalism and thinks about nationalist principles, you can't help but see that they are the same principles that the National Socialists had. So even when you get people that denounce National Socialism, if they're actually sticking to nationalist principles, that's what they are promoting anyway. They are promoting National Socialism. I guess some people just think that it's going to be more productive not to actually have links with it. But I don't mind having links with it. I would rather explain to people what National Socialism is about rather than deny being a National Socialist. That's why I have so much respect for the Nordic resistance movement, who are openly National Socialist. Well, we've also got Donald Trump coming over to Britain today, and that's been fairly entertaining. So far, he's been tweeting away while he was actually on the flight. Mr. Trump took aim at the Mayor of London, who has seemingly condoned a planned demonstration on the streets of central London today. As the president approached the UK, he tweeted, "Sadiq Khan, who by all accounts has done a terrible job as Mayor of London, has been foolishly nasty to the visiting President of the United States, by far the most important ally of the United Kingdom. He is a stone-cold loser who should focus on crime in London and not me." I think that's brilliant. He should be focusing on crime in London. And he's particularly offensive to the rest of the nation by being rude to the President of the United States. So he's quite clearly putting his emotions ahead of the good of the nation. He's putting his own personal vendetta against Donald Trump. That's more important to him than the goodwill that Britain would like to have from the visiting president of the United States. Everything Khan does, he just makes himself hated all the more by the general population of Britain. I'm sure the white folks of London hate the fact that he's actually their mayor. And the mayor really should, he's got no business to be getting involved in foreign politics anyway. He's got no business at all communicating with the leaders of foreign countries. He should just be concentrating on London. I mean, Donald Trump is completely right to say this. As Air Force One made its descent, Mr. Trump continued, "Khan reminds me very much of our very dumb and incompetent mayor of New York City, de Blasio, who has also done a terrible job, but Khan is only half his height," which I thought was pretty funny there. And of course, Sadiq Khan has also, I mean, he wrote an editorial over the weekend calling Donald Trump a fascist, calling him a fascist and saying that he was a modern day fascist and his policies are fascism, which of course is nonsense. Absolute nonsense. I mean, all Donald Trump is trying to do is do what's best for his country. And he doesn't say that that's only, the country is only white Americans. I mean, most of what Donald Trump has done has been good for blacks. You look at the unemployment rate for whites has not got any better. But for blacks over there, the unemployment rate has done really, really well. And he's there saying that he's going to make promoting homosexuality around the world his number one policy. So for Khan to be calling him a fascist is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you could say that Donald Trump, sometimes he's politically incorrect. And of course, you know, that's why we like him, because he's politically incorrect. But he's certainly not putting in place fascist policies. He's trying to do what's best for America. And every country should be doing what's best for their own people. And not including what's best for other countries in what they're doing. You know, you have to look out for yourself. Nobody else is going to look out for you. You have to go out and work and provide a roof over your head. You can't expect other people to do that. And it's the same with a country. When you're running a country, you are the only person that is going to do what's best for your country. Nobody else is. "It is the latest row to erupt between the two men, following Mr. Khan attacking language used by Trump ahead of his state visit this week." And I guess he's just referring to Trump saying that he liked Boris Johnson, I guess. I mean, that's all he said. We all knew that anyway. It's hardly anything new. But as Mr. Trump crossed the Atlantic, he compared Mr. Khan to far-left New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. According to the Mail Online, he said, "I don't think much of him. He's the twin of de Blasio, except shorter." Mr. Khan and Trump have had a history of spats dating back to 2016. Back then, Mr. Khan said Trump was interfering in the UK's leadership and Brexit. I mean, all Trump's doing is telling us his opinion when he's asked. But Trump snapped back, saying, "People ask me questions like you. You are asking me a question. Don't ask me the question if you don't want me to talk about it." And that's just it. He also challenged Mr. Khan to take an IQ test. Again, that was a particularly great moment, I think, in Donald Trump's presidency there when he said that Khan should take an IQ test because, of course, Pakistanis only have an average IQ of 85, sort of halfway between a Negro and a white man, because that's all they are, is hybrid, half white, half black, mixed race people. That's what they are. That's the same as Arabs, basically. They're just another type of Arab. Hundreds of thousands of protesters are expected to gather across the UK to condemn the president's visit. And of course, Sadiq Khan has given them a permit to hold protests against the president in London with that yellow childish baby blimp once again. And really, it's just embarrassing. I think the whole of the rest of the country is just embarrassed by Sadiq Khan's behaviour. And Donald Trump is just going to be laughing the whole afternoon because he's not going to be looking at these protests. He's at Buckingham Palace with the Queen and with the Prince there and their wives. And he's got his whole family there with him as well. And I hope it all goes very well for them. There's a lot of pomp and ceremony. It's been very nice to watch on the television and the brass bands playing. Yeah, it's great. And also because it really rubs the left's nose in it to see Donald Trump being treated so well by the royalty of Great Britain. It's great to see. Anyway, we've also got some good news here to finish the podcast with concerning the Brexit Party. And of course, the Brexit Party are really controlled opposition. They really are just the Conservative Party, but real Conservatives, I would say. But then again, he's also got some leftists in there as well, just people that are committed to Brexit. But I think overwhelmingly, the Brexit Party is made up of civic nationalist-minded Conservatives, which is obviously going to be better than the Tory party that we do have, which is filled with progressives and liberals. But Nigel Farage's newly formed Brexit Party have sensationally topped the opinion polls in national elections for the first time, with Nigel Farage hailing it as a historic moment. And he's correct there. He really is correct, because it's never before been known that a new political party could get to the top of the national polls. Nobody's ever done that before. It's always been the Conservative Party or the Labour Party. And the fact that the Brexit Party has only been around for a couple of months, I mean, this is astounding. The poll by Opinium showed that in the event of a general election, the Brexit Party would be the largest party in Parliament with 26% of the vote. The Labour Party came second on 22%, and the governing Conservative Party in third place on 17%, followed by the Liberal Democrats on 16%. The Green Party received 11%, a significant rise for them from just 4% in the last Opinion poll, and the anti-Brexit Cuck Party achieved just 1%. And of course, this follows on from the BBC and the leftist media all trying to pretend that this EU election was actually a big win for the Liberal Democrats because they are anti-Brexit, but they only got 16% in this. And Nigel Farage, once again, he got 26% of the vote, the majority of the vote in this opinion poll. According to an electoral seat calculator, the poll's results would translate to 306 seats for the Brexit Party in the House of Commons, which is only 20 short of a majority, with the Labour Party on 205 seats and the Tories down to just 26. So what would have to happen there, if this translated to an actual general election, I guess he would have to form a coalition government with the Tories being the junior partners in order to get a majority. But I mean, he may well, by the time they have the general election, which is probably going to be in 2 years' time, he may well have that support, especially if whoever is the new leader of the Conservatives doesn't pull us out of the EU on World Trade Organization terms, because that's what the Brexit Party is standing on. That's what they're standing on. This no-deal Brexit, as the leftist media call it. That's what the Brexit Party is all about, leaving on World Trade Organization terms. So this is great news, and we could be seeing a Prime Minister Farage in 2 years' time, which, I would like to have a Prime Minister Farage. At least he is an alpha male. At least he is a fantastic speaker. At least he can answer questions and make the person asking them look like a complete fool. Obviously, I prefer Jacob Rees-Mogg, but Nigel Farage is in the same mould as Jacob Rees-Mogg, and he is a civic nationalist, which is better than having a leftist progressive pretending to be a conservative anyway, which is what we have now. So yeah, great news for the Brexit Party there. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan.